Yeah, you know, right. It's interesting because we have this, what you said, novel approach to this case, right? This intentional affliction of emotional distress, which requires extreme outrageous conduct. And in here, that conduct that they're claiming is extreme and outrageous is two things. One, not talking. And two, the statement made by the attorney that they hope Gabby Petito is found. All making that statement while knowing, under their contention anyway, that Ms. Petito has already died. The problem with this is it relies on that assumption that Ms. Petito has already died and that the parents knew that she had died and where she was.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, and author of the book Policing Domestic Violence, and host of the podcast Crime Analyst.
I'm Lisa Zambetti, I'm casting director, CBS's Criminal Minds, and we are continuing. Jim and Laura are using a microscope to go virtually line by line through Brian Laundrie's quote unquote, in inverted commas, confession. So why don't we just jump right back into it?
As we get to the next paragraph, if you read it, Lisa, you'll see he goes back in time.
When I pulled Gabby out of the water, she couldn't tell me what hurt. She had a small bump on her forehead that eventually got larger. Her feet hurt, her wrist hurt, but she was freezing, shaking violently. While carrying her, she continually made sounds of pain. Laying next to her, she said little, lapsing between violent shakes, gasping in pain, begging for an end to her pain. She would fall asleep and I would shake her awake, fearing she shouldn't close her eyes if she had a concussion. Maron.
All right. So we go back in time for some reason. He doesn't continue this chronological rendition of what supposedly happened. He now goes back and tells us out of order that when he pulled her out of the water, she couldn't tell me what hurt. The next sentence, he says, we'll skip a sentence. She says, her feet hurt, her wrist hurt. She couldn't tell me, but she tells him. So right there, he's contradicting himself. A small bump on her forehead that eventually got larger. She was shaking, freezing and shaking violently. While carrying her, now we're back to carrying, she continually made sounds of pain. Laying next to her, so this is after he already started the fire. So he edits out the fire in this rendition. In this timeline, the fire no longer exists. Lapsing between violent shakes, gasping in pain, and then this totally gratuitous begging for an end to her pain. She would fall asleep and I would shake her awake, fearing she shouldn't close her eyes if she had a concussion. It is outrageous to think that somebody who is in so much pain, who, quote, is begging to end her pain, that he cannot find this physical strength, because at one point his knees buckled, to continue to carry her to safety a few more minutes.
Well, it's just a fantastical work of fiction, isn't it? Saying she had a small bump on her forehead. Well, how did he know?
Did he see it?
And if he saw it, then why isn't he able to see what's around him either? And the body of water, I pulled Gabby out of the water. Well, what water? Was it the creek water? Was it shallow? Was it deep? Was he in the water carrying her? But yes, I think she couldn't tell me what hurt. And then to go on to describe her feet hurt, her wrist hurt, but she was freezing. Now, her feet hurting and her wrist hurting, we know they're not life-threatening injuries. So why make mention of that? The head you'd be much more concerned with, right? That eventually got larger. Well, how did he know? And what kind of time period? We go back to time of, you know, it doesn't just come up like an egg, like in the cartoons. It does take a passage of time for something to grow, but the violent shakes, lapsing between violent shakes. And because he keeps talking about the cold, I feel, and the freezing, that he's sort of referencing a hypothermic state, some kind of hypothermia that he's keeps giving a nod to, which, listening to various medical examiners, and as we know as well, Jim, you don't tend to get the violent shakes from hypothermia. You tend to go into a very calm state with hypothermia. Right. So the violent shakes, all of this to me just feels like what he would imagine, or maybe there's a kernel of truth of a part of it, but certainly not the totality of what he's saying. It just seems to be this work of fiction.
And he's introducing this idea, begging for an end to her pain. He's introducing this idea that this is her idea, that she wants an end to this pain. And again, this is from a fall in a creek from no height, right? They're crossing the creek, ground level, and she falls. You know, my father was in a terrible climbing accident, you know, where he was with a partner and they fell from a tremendous height and hit the floor of the valley. And he had to try to get help. And the person he was with had shattered every bone in their body. Now that's pain. I mean, that's somebody who is not able to move, and you probably should not move them because of that kind of an extreme accident, not a trip in a creek.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point, actually, Lisa, because normally when something like that happens, you have adrenaline that enables you to do things with an extraordinary injury. And given that he's talking about feet and wrists, and given that he should be full of adrenaline too, because this is happening now and unfolding, people tend to get this superhuman capacity and capability, you know, of him just being able to yell for help or run for help or go and get help, or
pick
even
her up
for her
and carry her.
Yeah, for him to carry her, but also for her. You know, he's saying, he's trying to make out that she is talking to him. She is saying certain things, but then she is not conscious again. It just doesn't seem to ring true in the narrative. I know people who've shattered legs as well and walked themselves out of creeks when they've been hiking for 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles. But yet he's saying, well, the narrative just doesn't make any sense at all. But obviously, you know, for me, he's setting things up here, the begging for an end to her pain, this begging, this sort of conjures up like a wounded animal, this kind of thing now starts to take shape. So he continues on.
She would wake in pain, start her whole painful cycle again. She was furious that I was the one waking her. She wouldn't let me try to cross the creek. So she wouldn't let me try to cross the creek. Thought like me that the fire would go out in her sleep and she'd freeze. I don't know the extent of Gabby's injuries, only that she was in extreme pain. I ended her life. I thought it was merciful that it is what she wanted. But I see now all the mistakes I made. I panicked. I was in shock. From the moment I decided to took away her pain, I knew I couldn't go on without her.
This is just horrific. Absolutely horrific. The first part, saying that she was furious. Again, from watching the police van stop, he's still casting her in a negative light. The word furious with me, that it's her that has some kind of issue in the way that she interacts and that she wouldn't let me try to cross the creek. Well, when someone is dying and your beloved is dying, you do everything and anything to get that person to safety, irrespective of whether they want you to go or not. I will be back. I have to get help. I love you. I would be back momentarily and you would go. But he's trying to make it sound like she's the one that's in control, which is all what we saw in the police van stop, which is utter bullshit. This is just so, the whole letter, but particularly this section, is just so offensive. I can't imagine what Gabby's mother and father must think, having listened to people even talk about this, us talk about it and give it airtime, because it's just such a work of fiction. Her injuries, he didn't know the extend, I think he says, of her injuries. Mm-hmm. He spells injuries wrong. Only that she was in extreme pain. I ended her life. I thought it was merciful that it's what she wanted. I see now all the mistakes I made. I ended her life when he doesn't even know what injuries she has. Who does that?
It's such a flimsy, bullshit, garbage justification, rationalization for his behavior. He projects the blame on her. She's the one that fell. She's the one that couldn't stand the pain. I did it out of mercy. It's a bunch of bullshit. There's absolutely no way that is an actual, there's nothing rational about that. There's nothing real about that. It's complete bullshit made up to make him seem like he wasn't really such a bad guy. He was actually trying to help her out. He thought that's what she wanted. Bullshit. Bullshit.
And more so, Jim, he's the hero. You know, he's taking this very difficult decision, but he has to do it because it's what she was begging him to do. Rather than, she may well be in pain, I'm sure she was not begging him to kill her. And let's not forget, he manually strangled her. Of what that takes to manually strangle someone, manually throttle and strangle your beloved.
For minutes it took. And to say, he says, she wouldn't let me try to cross the creek. Wait a minute. If she fell when they were trying to cross the creek and he carried her for so long, why are they still trying to cross the creek? What is he doing? Is he going across this creek and coming back and going across it and coming back and going across it and coming back? Is that what happens? Does the trail just keep crossing the creek? Or do you cross the creek and go towards the car? I mean, it makes no sense. But to have him say, I ended her life. I was actually shocked that he actually took the position. It wasn't a passive, she had me end her life or something like that. He says, I ended her life. I thought it was merciful, that it was what she wanted, but I see now all that crap. But from the moment I decided, took away her pain, I knew I couldn't go on without her. So the thing is, he has to turn it around back on her. From the moment I decided, to take her life, I knew I was going to kill myself, is what he's saying. As if anybody gives a damn. You're saying that you loved her so much that you decided 5 to 10 minutes away from your van and safety and the ability to get help, you decided to strangle her, to take minutes to strangle the life out of her, to wrap your hands around her neck and squeeze and strangle her to death, this person you loved. Why not tear your shirt up and wrap some bandages around wherever she needs it? Make a splint for her. Help her to safety. It is just completely asinine, ignorant, and unfathomable that this could actually ever happen, that any human being would actually make those kinds of decisions under these circumstances. He's trying to sell us a bunch of bullshit. And I can't believe that he actually intended us to believe this crap.
There was also an important tense change in there. So I ended her life is the euphemism for I throttled her by placing my hands around her neck and I asphyxiated her to the point that she died. He says, I thought it was merciful that it is what she wanted, not that it was what she wanted, because we know it wasn't what she wanted at all. Full stop.
Right.
Hey, lovely listeners. If you want more in-depth analysis and psychological insight about Gabby Petito's horrific murder, listen to my podcast, Crime Analyst. I'm breaking down every aspect of the case, including analysing Gabby's and Brian's social media, the police body-worn camera footage, the timeline of the case as it unfolded, the so-called confession letters, and the lawsuit Gabby's family filed against the Laundries. I'm deconstructing the nuanced and granular detail in order to identify the lessons to intervene and prevent in future cases so that Gabby's murder was not in vain. Currently, 4 to 5 women are murdered every day here in America by a current or former male partner. And in many cases, the warning signs are missed. Help me change that. Listen via the Crime Analyst website, www.crime-analyst.com, or subscribe to Crime Analyst wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, be curious, ask questions, and always trust your instinct.
I rushed home to spend any time I had left with my family. I wanted to drive north and let James or TJ kill me, but I wouldn't want them to spend time in jail over my mistake, even though I'm sure they would have liked to. I'm ending my life not because of a fear of punishment, but rather because I can't stand to live another day without her. I've lost our whole future together, every moment we could have shared. I'm sorry for everyone's loss. Please do not make life harder for my family. They lost a son and a daughter, the most wonderful girl in the world. Gabby, I'm sorry. Should I just finish off here? I have killed myself by this creek in the hopes that animals may tear me apart, that it may make some of her family happy. Please pick up all my things. Gabby hated people who litter.
Okay. Yeah. Scoff. That's the right. So here's the worst part of it. My mistake. So him murdering Gabby was my mistake. Talk about minimization. Talk about not taking responsibility for what you did. Talk about trying to make people look at you better. It's all narcissism here. It's all arrogance. It's all bullshit. And then to say, I'm ending my life not because of fear of punishment. I mean, clearly he's got that on his mind. That's why he's mentioning it. Why does he care? Why is it so important when you're talking about the death of this person you love so much that you caused, that you inflicted upon her? Why is it so important for you to make sure that everybody knows that you're not doing this because you're afraid of punishment? Because you don't want to go to jail for the rest of your life. You're doing it because you can't stand to live without her. Bullshit. Bullshit.
Well, it's just all about him, isn't it? Everything is about him. I panicked. I was in shock. From the moment I decided I took away her pain, I knew I couldn't go on without her. I rushed home. Okay, so firstly, he doesn't even talk about what happened after Gabby's dead. How did he then find the van? Because he seemed to not struggle to find the van after she's dead. There's no complete omission about what happened afterwards. We just jump forward to him rushing home to spend time that he had left with his family. Well, that's a huge gap in between, isn't it? And it's just about him spending time with his family and not blaming his family or giving his family a hard time. That's unreal. So he leaves his loved one out there. He makes no attempt to even the next day call for help. He tells no one. Are we expected to believe that he then September the 1st appears in Florida at his parents' address? Remember, September the 2nd, they lawyer up. They pay a retainer. But so the story goes, he told nobody in between his loved one, Gabby, who he loves so much. He says nothing about to anyone, never calls for help, never tries to rectify this, never claims it was an accident. Not one time does he do that.
No, and he doesn't. And he leaves her body out there. He hides it. He buries it.
And just goes on his way.
Yes.
I mean, it's just so fantastical. And not for fear of punishment, as you said, Jim, but I can't stand to live a day without her. Well, that's utter nonsense because he's not telling anyone what happened or wanting to get her body back to her family. None of his actions tie to these words at all. He actually did the exact opposite. He goes home, and what's more, they go on holiday together. They all go off. So when we think about what's in here versus the actions that were taken, they're two very different things. The I'm sorry for everyone's loss, spelling mistakes and lack of grammar in that. Please do not make life harder for my family because they know what went on because I told them. I just cannot believe that he did not. That's my belief and that's my opinion because I don't believe this was a premeditated act, i.e. he set out to go across the country in a van and to kill Gabby. I don't believe that that's what happened. But when something as shocking and as horrific and as life-altering and life-changing as this happened. This isn't somebody who's killed multiple times and therefore they know exactly what to do. He drives home to his family for a reason, in my opinion. And for none of this to leak out at any point, that part is fantastical. But please don't be hard on my family. They lost a son and a daughter. Well, what about Gabby's mom and dad?
Not a word. Nothing.
Not a word about them. Gabby, I'm sorry. I've killed myself by this creek in the hopes that animals may tear me apart. What, like what happened to Gabby? Because that's what you left to have happen to your beloved, to Gabby, to this beautiful, sunny, bright girl who saw the good in everybody. I hope that it may make some of her family happy. Oh, and by the way, please pick up all of my things. Gabby hated people who litter. What a peculiar way to end a so-called confession. Well, giving instructions, taking control, telling people what to do. And by the way, it was always Brian in his post that talked about littering and plastic bottles, because I've analyzed his account. It was never Gabby, but there was one post on hers in the last one of five where it talked about littering, which I believe that it was Brian that was posting. And he signs off with an instruction and projects it onto Gabby. Utter BS. The whole, it's like a final insult. Although it's such a small detail, it just feels like a final insult.
Yes, something about that line makes me just want to tell him to fuck off. I have a question for both of you.
He didn't even bother picking up her body. I mean, what the hell? Why wouldn't he, when he gets back to the van, why wouldn't he get whatever equipment he needed? Why wouldn't he charge up his phone? Why wouldn't he do anything that would then allow people to come back and at least give her the dignity of a burial, at least reunite her with her family, like their lawyer made in that statement, a statement Brian certainly was aware of. He knew exactly where she was. He knew exactly what happened to her. Yet he and his family allowed their lawyer, or instructed their lawyer, to make a statement that clearly indicated the opposite. That they didn't know where she was, that they hoped she would be reunited with them. But again, I believe it was written very carefully to hide the fact that they already knew she was dead.
It's just gut-wrenching. And also, we know that Brian refused any phone calls from Nicole and from Joe, from mum and dad, within this time. So he had multiple opportunities, as we know, across the timeline to say what happened and to reunite at least Gabby's body with her family, but he did the exact opposite. And that's why I think that final line is, it's just such a, I'm trying to find the right word. It's like an insidious thing to say when you've done some things that are just so heinous. And then he gives an instruction over something so minor, but projects it onto her. When he took her voice, he took her, he brutally killed her. Make no mistake about that. Hands around the neck. And we know that when was it Dr. Blue who did the autopsy, he leaked out on one of his media interviews that she was throttled, and that it's one of the most common methods of how men kill women that they have relationships with. And he leaked that out in the very early days. And that's exactly what he did. The rest of it, bearing in mind there may well be two other confessions that exist, is just fantastical. The sort of the padding around it and the reason given, I believe, is much more about a deflection to protect his family, his sort of last claim of the narrative. And that also is something I find very offensive, that now people are talking about him again and not about Gabby. And it's his words that will echo in people's ears. So I really hope our listeners, you know, we do want to make sure that Gabby is thought about, even though we've been talking about his words and what he did. We want to center Gabby as always, and I don't want him to get the last word.
I just had a quick question for both of you. when I hear this narrative, it just feels like it was something that was crafted to be a defense, as though he could have tried this mercy killing defense if he ever was arrested and went to trial. And so that's why I was surprised that then he ended his life and didn't try this defense. I don't know if you have any response to that, if it felt like that to you.
Well, you know, he never knew whether or not he would actually go through with it. He writes, "I have killed myself by this creek." Again, well, he hadn't killed himself at that point. So he is projecting, and I think this tries to, because he's such a narcissist, his image is very important to him, and that's why he wanted this to be the lasting memory of him. But I don't know if he knew whether or not he had the actual guts to go through with it. But he's clearly a murderer. I mean, he's admitting to it, but he's trying to make it seem justified. So it's a mercy killing as opposed to a murder. And we all know from the evidence that that's just complete and utter bullshit. And nobody in their right mind is going to believe that crap.
I would certainly like to see the other letters that were written to know what else was being posited, because yes, it might well be a trying out. How does it sound? You know, if you commit it to paper, it may well have been. If Roberta did send a letter offering assistance, now we don't know what she offered assistance with, but the whole, if you were in prison, I'll send a cake with a saw in it, which to me talks to that was an option that was on the table. So maybe he's trying things out, and it was one of a number of things that we should think about in context. But certainly the trying it out, there are so many holes in it. And as I mentioned, there were at least 14 words that have been spelt wrong, tense changes and grammatical errors, that perhaps it wasn't the last thing that he wanted to be found. Perhaps there are other things, but it's certainly the absence of calling for assistance, the absence of trying to, even once he had left the park, he's got some time and distance behind him.
It's all indications of guilt.
Yeah, trying to make it right or trying to do the right thing. He never once did the right thing, not one thing.
No, because it was all evidence of his guilt. It was all clearly a guilty conscience. And what he was trying to do was escape. And it makes no actual sense.
Yeah, and it just makes me think how brutal the Laundrie family was to the Petitos. I mean, yes, if he confessed to his family, she was already dead. There's nothing that they could do to bring her back to life. But for God's sakes, you know, let her family find her remains before they are further degraded so they have something of her. I mean, that's what I'm just thinking of as a parent, that I would just want something of her to recover. And, you know, the longer she's out there, that must have been just so incredibly traumatizing for them to think
of. It's torture. Torture to delay, torture to mislead, torture to give false hope, torture to kill someone's daughter. It's horrible.
Well, let's not forget there were a number of text messages that Nicole received. I believe that Brian had sent those messages. And therefore, it wasn't a case of just saying nothing. He was trying to convey a narrative that Gabby may well still be alive. So he was clearly thinking through what happens next. Although, you know, as we know, Jim, he's not criminally sophisticated. He hasn't got everything thought through. But there is a part of him that is still trying to manipulate and control and give false hope and ensure that people didn't find him. He took himself off, remember. He disappeared.
The mystery surrounding the disappearance of Gabby Petito is deepening tonight. You see, Petito went missing during a cross-country trip with her fiancé. Now he's missing.
A massive search. More than 50 officers and FBI agents combing a 24,000-acre park near Sarasota, Florida, looking for Brian Laundrie. Investigators have been trying to speak with him for days. Laundrie's family contacted the FBI Friday night, claiming they haven't seen him since Tuesday. His family believes the 23-year-old entered...
The lawsuit is something that is still live and it's ongoing. And I thought that Judge Carroll may take more time to make a decision. It seems quite quick to have a two-week turnaround on a case like this. And of course, Judge Carroll will have to weigh up the emotional sense of feeling, how people feel about Gabby Petito. And if it goes to a jury trial, I suspect that that Gabby's parents have quite a good chance of this case succeeding. But we'll see. I think it is really one to watch. But I think the timing of all of this is very strategic and interesting.
And I think it's also just the fact that the Laundrie's attorney released this is maybe even will add another count to the charges that they're bringing, the suit that they bring, because it's very insensitive to do that. And as you said, Laura, it's very strategic. Hopefully it's a strategy that will backfire on them.
Time will tell. Mm-hmm. Time will tell. But we definitely want everybody to center Gabby Petito and think about Gabby. A young woman was brutally killed and her family are still trying to get answers. So please use the hashtag her name was Gabby Petito and hashtag Gabby Petito, and take good care of yourselves. I know that this has probably been quite a distressing listen. At times, Jim and I get carried away in the detail of language and our analysis, and perhaps we don't necessarily give the sentiment behind it as much thought at times when we're analysing something. But it's a very difficult letter, actually, very distressing. Someone saying they ended another human being's life just like that and put her out of her misery as if she's an animal or a pet, which is really what he's saying. It's just very distressing, everything about this case and the many others that we discussed too. So I hope that there is some form of justice for Gabby Petito. You can also use the hashtag justice for Gabby. So for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
Real Crime Profile was created by Jim Clementi, Laura Richards, and Lisa Zambetti. Produced by Laura Richards, Lisa Zambetti, Jim Clementi, and XG Productions, and distributed by Wondery. Editing by Nick Jaworski at Podcast Monster. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba.